Number 19B.
Well, we come to the next vertical. We are still in that matrix from the point of view of truth. And the next vertical shows the coincidence of God and man. Now, we know that from the textbook and know that Mrs. Eddy says that the Christ illustrates the spiritual agreement between God and man, or the divine coincidence of God and man, the Immanuel of God and man, that is the Christ. So at the point of Christianity, we see that coincidence is showing the unity of man and God. So the focal point is of man being one with God. Now, how does he explain this coincidence? He uses again four steps that are showing that coincidence must be looked at from the point of view of the Word, and afterwards from the Christ, then afterwards from the point of Christianity, and then of science. And these four points are very clear if we look at it metaphysically through the terminology of Christian Science. The very first point is that it shows really that what the Father does, the Son does likewise. You have the coincidence or spiritual agreement that there is no difference between what the Father does and what the Son does. That the Son can do nothing else but that which he sees the Father do. That's a starting point here, that the Son can do nothing of himself. If he tries to do something of himself, he has no coincidence with the Father. So the first statement is that coincidence with the Father. Yes, that's nice, and yet we can say these are terms, they are nice terms, but what do they mean? If I come to this point where I see, well, the coincidence is that what the Father does, the Son does likewise, that I ask myself, what does the Father do? I want to know what he does. If I don't know what he does, then I can't do what he does. Quite simple. In the Christ, we know from the textbook. That's why we need again the textbook for explanation of a statement. In the textbook, we have that first translation where it is shown what the Father does. Because the very first title there is God, and says, what is God? His divine principle, life, truth, love, soul, spirit, mind. That is what he does, because it's a translation, the translation of immortal mind. So that is what the Father does. The Father always does that. So we can really bring back all the doings of the Father, so to say, way back to the Christ order, which is a translation order. That order does not define the nature of God. This is important to know. That order does not define God, though God is first written down there. But that order is showing the translatability of God to man. It's therefore not the definition of God. It's much more showing the definition of the translation of God. So we can leave out the term definition, and you just can see it shows now the translation of God, how God works as the Christ. So if he works in that Christ order, then I say, all right, and I'm going to work in the same way. And so I go in practice, in life practice, and I take that, no matter if I have to treat the patient or not the patient, no matter if I have a problem. In fact, actually, I seldom have problems. That's wonderful. Wouldn't you like to be in my case? Huh? I actually have very seldom problems. Sometimes when I think, have I ever tried to make a demonstration about something in my life? I must think, I can't quite remember. Oh, yes, once I had flu, that's true. I'm constantly working in Christian Science without making demonstrations per se. The working in Christian Science is the demonstration itself. Because I like to sit back and just lean back in my chair. I have a very nice, easy chair. A very old one, you know. The older it is, the more comfortable it is. And I lean back in that chair And when my secretary comes in, she says, "Oh, you are on the throne." So I do that what he says here. What is the Christ work? What does the Son work? He does the same work as God. So I go in my consciousness through that Christ order and begin to think, yes, there is a divine principle always working. There is the potentiality of the divine principle just being always there, always at the point of wanting to express itself, to manifest itself. So I have a feeling right now in the whole universe there is that divine principle just there as a potential power that says, I'm there and I go now to express myself as life. And I feel that that principle says, I'm not sitting still, I have an expression, I have a power of expression as life, and therefore I constantly bring forth always newness of life. I'm really that newness, that power of the newness of life, which always says, let there be, let there be, let there be, that impulsion in the whole universe, no matter in China or in Switzerland or in America, it's still there, saying, let there be life. And so I feel that divine principle is constantly demonstrating, constantly working, and as I go along with it, I work too. I'm in the same rhythm, and I do the work that the Father does. He doesn't mind it, that I take, that I may do his work too. So I go along that, and I see this infinite power of life that is just irresistible, that is just irrepressible, really. You can't put it down, you can't repress it. It has that power that always breaks through. It's the breaking through power, as Micah would so say it. He breaks through, Micah would say. And that's that life power that has no opposition, that knows no opposition, that no hindrance, that cannot be stopped. I get the feeling of that infinite stream of life that just flows. Nobody can put it backward. Nobody can make it flow backward, back into the source. That source goes out and out and out. Nothing can go into that source. So I feel the whole world is really taken along with that stream of life from and goes along with it and overfloods the borders and overfloods the whole land. That's how the Bible expresses it, that the river went over the borders, went over the dam, because you can't stop it. You can't say, stop, stop, stop. No, you can't. Life goes on. And therefore, I can see that life will always go on, and therefore will gather momentum, and will gather more momentum, just as you have it in nature, that once a real river gets going, you can't stop it anymore, and gets momentum, and nothing can stand anymore in its way. It just takes it right, takes it, what do you say, it takes it with it, carries it along, and that is what life does. It just carries along. And then I see that the Father works as truth, and that he is working as that truth, constantly establishing the truth about everything on the whole world. Always at work to say, I find ways and means so that the truth is being demonstrated, so that nothing can be suppressed which is truthful, that finally truth breaks through, that truth will be established, that it overturns and overturns and overturns until it comes whose right it is, that the factuality of truth will finally be established, even to the human sense, so that I flow with it, with that truth, and I come to love and see, yes, that divine principle is of the nature of love, that it has a design that it wants to bring out. That divine principle as love is not blind to the future, that it is not indefinite to the future, that it has a great aim into the future. I trust that whatever then happens is geared towards that goal in the future, that everything is taken in order that the future purpose is brought out, so that the divine principle makes sense in this life and not nonsense in this life. I only have to see that it makes sense, and I know it, that it makes sense, because that divine principle is love and therefore is not nonsense. and has meaning. So it is not meaningless. So it is not fruitless. It is constantly bringing out something higher. Not something nice, but always something higher. Something higher, something higher. I know that. Gosh, we have experienced that now in our development of the Christian Science idea since Mrs. Eddy left, that principle was working and working towards a high goal in love, namely to show us really, and finally it will show to the world what the science of God is. Then I go to soul. It is as if there would be the point where it turns over from the divinely subjective to the divinely objective, because it says, and that's what the divine principle as the pushing of life, as the urge of life, as the impulsion of life, and the establishment of truth for the purpose of a high goal is then translating itself through soul to every point, so that at every point the identical nature of God is brought out. Soul identifies principle, life, truth, and love at every point, so that through translation nothing gets lost in that translation. In that translation, not 50% gets lost somewhere on the way on translation, but it is identically brought forth and objectified in the universe as that ruling of the divine principle, life, truth, and love. And so I see that in identifying itself objectively, divinely objectively in the world, it will have to have the nature of spirit, namely of bringing order and further order, hierarchical order into everything, because spirit is order. It also gives me a sense that it will wipe out everything that does not belong to the order of spirit, that it cleans every situation. It's so wonderful to see that science purifies every situation. Even if we cling to something which is humanly nice and valuable, it even cleans the best of the human character, the gold of the human character. It cleans out everything that is not aligned to the far purpose that it wants to achieve, so that it brings order into the manifestation and objectification of that working of principle. So that finally, when everything is purified and is put into the divine order and brings together in order everything and in a true constellation that is just right, that it brings out at the focal point of you, at mind, light instantaneously, that it manifests itself in every situation which is under consideration. It's then I work as God works. Can you see? It's a pity that I encounter very few students in all those years who use in their practical life the Christ order. They are so used to go along the word order. It has been drilled into us over years and years. So we have been drilled over years and years in the word order and only have taken notice, so to say, of the Christ order. But do we have really used it day in and day out? That's another question. And I find very few students who do that. They miss a lot. They miss an enormous lot. Now, one only gets really the power of the word through the Christ order. Then really one feels that the Christ is really that enormous well of life that brings forth a stream and that attracts everything with it and that takes everything along that way, that order of life, and therefore cannot help but fulfill itself. And so we feel the power of the word. Only by going through the word we fill our consciousness with the right starting point. That's what we do. But we may not feel the power of the word. Have you felt the power of the word? Is, I think, in one of Mrs. Eddy's hymns. Huh? And that is what we get when we go through the Christ order. So that's my answer here to what John says, What the Father does, the Son does also. Then he goes a step further, and then he comes to the point where he says, and the Father will show you greater works. And then one is astonished and say, what greater works could be done? Now Jesus would say that you would do greater works. And again, that gives us a sense of even more of the Christ, that says the Christ is not something that works so that there is stability in harmony, or that harmony is at the point of stability. Greater works will be done. In order to do greater works, the old stability has to given up, has to make room for a higher level of things, so that we feel really here the idea of the Christ has up to now always shown us a higher sense of being. Think about it, that there were 15 billion years going on without that we noticed any higher works, because we are not here. And when we were here, we began to see that evolution was taking on always higher and a higher level. And so we can see today that evolution, or spiritual evolution, will bring us constantly into higher and higher levels of consciousness. So that we must not shut our mentality and say, well, what Mrs. Eddy has written in the textbook is the final word. Yes, it is the final revelation, but not the final word. It's the final revelation. We have to see that we can read in that textbook a higher sense of it. When I read it first, I just read letters. I read words. I read perhaps sentences that make sense. But little by little, John Dolly has shown us that we can do higher works with the textbook, that we can see the textbook in its structure, that we can see it in its restructuring ability, that we can see the textbook in its dimensional sense, that we can see it as a matrix, and so on, and so on, and so on, within a cosmological split second, so to say. We have witnessed over the last, 80 years since Mrs. Eddy, a constant, really, appearing of a higher vision and a higher sense of what being is. And that is going on if we have our minds open. So greater works will you do. Mrs. Eddy said in Unity of Good, which I had asked you to read also, she said, well, at the present moment, when she was writing in 1887, at the present moment, really, the science of physical harmony is the highest that people can swallow. They can't swallow yet the science of spiritual harmony. So she said, let's wait another half century, and then the time will be ready for higher works, for a higher sense, to see really the science of spiritual harmony, so that Christian Science is not just seen as a science of physical harmony, therefore a science of physical healing, but really as what it should be, as a science of being, being capitalized, a science of being, so that Christian Science becomes the interpretation and the explanation of the world, of the whole world, and not just of a little bit of a disease and here a little bit of a stomach ache and so on, but really the big thing. And so I have started out and said, what is one of the drawbacks usually in our life is that we think small. We are small thinkers instead of thinking big, of thinking big. The more we think big, the less problems we have, the less negative problems we have. The more we think big, the more big problems show themselves and are solved. Positive problems, not negative problems, are being brought to our attention to be seen and to be really lived. So she goes on, John goes on to a third incident. After having shown that we'll do greater works, he shows something very interesting. He says that the Father judges no man. but he has given the judgment into the hands of the Son. The Father judges no man. Oh, doesn't theology think that the Father judges every man? That he is a great bookkeeper, and in that bookkeeping he has a file for everyone, and he notices there what we have been doing, if we have been a good boy or a bad boy, and then he punishes according to that behavior. And so the sense is the Father judges men. God never judges men. Why not? He cannot. He cannot because he is not aware of anything that goes wrong. He's not aware of anything that goes wrong. So he never judges men. But interestingly, then John says, but that judgment is given to the Christ, to the Son. He judges. Why does he judge? Well, what does it mean? One has naturally to translate it into science and see, yes, that's true. The moment we are not accepting the Christ, we find no coincidence with God, and therefore we stumble. If we are not in line really with the Christ, so that we find our unity with God, then we are punished, then we suffer. So it is actually the Son that has the judgment. It's the question, did I put that right? Did I make it plausible, really, what he says here? Huh? A Father, God, cannot judge, because he only knows the truth. But the Son does judge. The Son is what? Is our coincidence, our unity, our Emmanuel with God. If that is not practiced, if that is not seen, then naturally we hit our head towards a wall, namely against the Christ. And he says, nothing doing. You are on the wrong track. I judge you. You are on the wrong track. You can't succeed. So it is actually the Christ that judges. What is the Christ? The Christ is not something mystical. The Christ is our unity with God. So years ago, I started out by saying, I always see in everyday life with the students that they make one big mistake, that they always go from the Word direct to Christianity without using the Christ, you remember, and that doesn't work. The order is Word and then Christ. The order is stating what God is, then the Christ being one with that statement, being in accord with that statement, being in spiritual agreement with that statement, and then the outcome is positive. If I'm not in agreement with that statement, then I'm the Antichrist. I use the Antichrist. I go against that spiritual agreement. Then I fall out of the order of God. And that shows itself as disease, as discord, and all the erroneous situations. So it's always the Son that judges. So we have it in the palm of our hand not to be judged. We only have to see that we are always adhering to the Father, that adhering is the Christ. If we adhere to the Father, then there is no judgment on us. So if we are judged, it is our fault and not that what God does. So the Father doesn't judge. Then he goes on and comes to the last one, to the fourth one of science, where he shows in science something else. He says, he that heareth my word and believeth on him that sent me. You can hear at once science coming in, he that believeth, he that understandeth. Believing was just a term that they used in the Bible for understanding. So he that heareth the word, takes it in, and believeth on him that sent me, believeth on the Father that sent the Christ, has everlasting life. You can see again the quaternity, that there is always the Father, the Son, and the eternal life through understanding. Can you see, whatever we take up in that gospel, every little detail, he practically always states it in the four, whatever he does. So that if we take it in, we become the city foursquare. You are the city. We cannot help anymore but to think in word, Christ, Christianity, and science. So he said, he will have everlasting life, and they that hear shall live, because for as the Father has life in himself, so has he given it to the Son to have life in himself, so that there is only one life, so that the life of the Father coincides with the life of the Son, and you have the complete coincidence here. If we understand really the Father and the Son, we have the same life as the life that is God. A terrific sense of as showing that principle and practice are actually one, because the life that is God and the life of man is the one life, so that principle and practice become one. Yes, that's the story of the Christ in this way. Let's go quickly through that last vertical. It shows what is that coincidence of the Christ. How do we have that coincidence with the Christ? You have it by saying first, what the Father does, the Son does too. Get the Christ translation. Then as a second, he brings in an evolving sense of that work and says, and greater works shall you do than you do now, giving the evolutive sense of the Christ, and says the Christ constantly evolves by bringing back always everything back to the Father, and the Father expressing himself again, so that there is an evolving Christ, so that the world is never the same, and the world will be never the same after this week as it was before this week. Never. History will not be the same. We will have turned history around a little corner. We have bent the development of history around the corner. I bet it. Because we have introduced into our consciousness really that sense that science is the world, and have begun to see the world as science. And that is so big that it must change history. And I'm not afraid with that prophecy that it is not fulfilled. I prophesied that again right back in the year, that history will no more be the same when all the Cold War went on with the Pershing II and the cruise missiles in Germany to put them there, and where we are at the brink of an atomic war. I gave the chapter on apocalypse, and I said at the end of the chapter on apocalypse, the world will no more be the same. It will turn, and it turned right afterwards. This is not prophecy. This is not because I'm a prophet. I'm not a prophet. But science knows. It's science. So Mrs. Eddy says, when we get to divine science, then prophecy pauses. We don't need any more prophecy. We only need to understand the science. Then we know what is coming, what it is doing. So here we have the same, but greater works will we do. Will be done, not because we do it, but because the Christ idea is constantly at work, and is at work in an exponential growth, in an exponential speed, in an exponential acceleration. So that Mrs. Eddy could say, well, history is drawing to a close. And so finally we have seen this is true because the Father has the same life as the life that we have. The life of the universe is the same life as the life of the divine principle. They are not separate. So if life is eternal and if life is developing, the world will develop and will evolve. And so finally, we have that one life, and that is the coincidence that is shown through the Christ. Yes, that's enough.